Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Curry, open three, puts it in. Quickly down the other end is Draymond Green. Green, back to Curry. Bang! Curry again. Back out Curry. Curry for three. It's good. Thompson, catch and shoot again. Klay Thompson from downtown. Final seconds here at Oracle Arena. It's official number 73. The greatest regular season in NBA history now belongs to the 2016 Golden State Warriors.
We have our certain identity of how we play, and obviously shooting at a high level, moving the ball. Everybody has a role, and we have fun doing it. So I don't know specifically. One similarity is that we love winning, and we love to compete, and we love to push ourselves. And that's what's pushed us to this opportunity we had tonight. You know, we need 16 wins. It's nice to be able to focus on that goal specifically now.
It's a great way to finish off what was an amazing regular season. I just told our guys I never in a million years would have guessed that record would ever be broken. I thought it was like DiMaggio's hit streak, really. I was wrong, but I will say the same thing now that I said 20 years ago. I don't think this will ever be broken.
We are here to celebrate greatness for 20 years. Excellence for 20 years.
Bryant gets to the basket and has 47 points.
See if he gets 50 here.
Bryant going to the basket. Kobe Bryant!
There it is!
A 50-point game in his farewell.
Final minute 30. Bryant for 14.
Has 53! Unbelievable stuff tonight.
Bryant for three.
Oh! Oh! Oh!
The Lakers down one. Will Kobe give them one last gamer? Bryant on the move with the jumper.
Oh, my! 58 points! And the Lakers lead!
Here's Bryant, two free throws for 60.
60. Close out Kobe Bryant's career with a win and one of the great farewell performances in any sport.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. Appreciate you sticking with us today. Hour number two is underway. It's going to be even better than hour number one. And if I may say, hour number one pretty much freaking rocks. So that's a good thing. Cushlin holding down the fort for that first 40-minute technical glitch that we had there, a little fiasco. Cush's mic was the only one working, so we got him locked and loaded there. And by the way, he started and launched a pretty good conversation that we want to follow up on about the greatest farewell performances in superstar athletes.
I spent
careers.
A whole afternoon researching it, got a page full of it, and only a couple guys with anything close to what Kobe did last night. It was one of those fascinating sports research days for me. I love days like that.
Yeah, and I'll be honest with you, I approached the entire thing differently, Jim, and we'll see what Aaron McCann thinks about it in a moment. My question today took no research at all because it's straight up opinion, and it follows up on the question I asked in a couple of days before last night. And I said to the listeners, we had good conversation, if you had your druthers, would you rather be in the building in Oracle Arena as the Warriors go for their 73rd win, or would you rather be at Kobe's farewell game? And most people seem to say, I'd rather see history in the 73. We've already seen a bunch
too.
Of... What's that?
I said that, too. I said I'd rather be in Oracle.
Because we've already seen a bunch of Kobe farewells on his tour at a bunch of other places. This would be his home farewell and his real final game of his NBA career, but a lot of people said they'd rather see the history. And I said I would rather see the Kobe game. And the reason why is we don't really know what we're going to get at the Oracle Arena if they're actually going to win 73. If you go there and pass up the Staples Center Kobe, you know, farewell game and they lose to Memphis and they stay tied with the Bulls, it's pretty depressing. So now the whole thing I was going to ask Jim, and I will ask at 866-240-1065, is now that both of them have been played and now that you saw the Warriors get 73, but you saw the Mamba get 60. Does that change your mind? Because I got to tell you, I watched. I had to get up very early for some stuff this morning, so I didn't watch all of it live. But I DVR'd both games, and today, when I was done with my morning responsibilities, the first one I watched was the Mamba. And, man, I'm talking spine-tingling stuff, chills kind of stuff, as he got to 45 in the fourth quarter, and there's no way he got 15 more points in him. I mean,
at that point to get 50.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was like 3 minutes to go. He still needed 5 for 50, and he just caught fire at the end. He made his last 5 shots, including 2 or 3 threes. So, anyway, my point is, now that it's over, would you rather have been at the Oracle Arena or Staples Center? And I'm sticking with the one I did before. I would rather have been there, and, man, the treat I would have gotten seeing Kobe Bryant in his last game get 60 points.
And before we get to Aaron McMahon of M-Live on the Pistons for that playoff series and these topics as well, for my answer to that new question, Bob, let me quote the knight from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. I have chosen poorly.
And, you know, it's not like you wouldn't have enjoyed seeing Steph hit his 403.
Which was
the
record.
And the 73 wins. But, man,
that game was over by middle of the second quarter.
What we saw, though, in L.A. was something very, very different and very, very special. Not to mention, and I didn't even think about this leading up to it, the fact that all of the legends were going to be there, too, that Magic would be there, that Shaq would be there. What's that?
Magic introduced him.
That's right, and called him the greatest Laker of all time, which launches another great sports radio topic, who is the greatest Laker of all time? What we saw last night from the Mamba reminding us of what he was, or is it Magic himself, or is it six-time champion Kareem? And on with Jerry West, the freaking logo, and on we go. Let's bring Aaron in. Aaron McCann, MLive.com, covers the Pistons. McMahon, excuse me. Aaron joining us on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Aaron, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you, Bob?
Excellent. Excellent, Aaron. Thanks for the time. You've heard a little bit of our lead up here. Where would you, if you had your choice, where would you have rather been? And I'm going to assume you wouldn't have wanted to be in Cleveland watching a bunch of backups play against each other between the Pistons and the Cavs.
You know, that's a good question. And going in, I probably would have said Oracle. You know, just the fact that obviously Golden State was going for the record and everything else.
Right.
But like you guys said, you know, I think looking at it afterwards, I think Los Angeles would have been the better spectacle. You know, the Warriors game was a blowout. Kobe ended up posting 60. So I mean, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback now. But both locations kind of had their own thing going, and it was nice to see, you know, some type of news come out of both of them, I guess.
It was great sports theater, no doubt about it. And history was made in both places, in a manner of speaking. You know, Kobe didn't set the record for points scored, but he scored hit for the seventh time, did I hear them say?
Yeah, seventh.
Seventh time he's had 60? Seven times in his 20-year career he's gone for over 60. So you see his career come to an end, and it's historical in that regard. But then, of course, you see Steph hit Magic number 400 from distance when the previous record was 268, and it was his, and then the 73 victories. They were both great sports theater, but I guess, you know, my answer, Aaron and Jim, is this late morning when I turned on the two games that I had DVR'd for last night, guess which one I went to first? I went to the Kobe one because I thought that was more special, and I bet a lot of people probably would like to have been there for that, too, so... There's no wrong answer. It's just a great spectacle. Aaron, just for kicks, where would you agree with Magic Johnson in his introduction to Kobe, or of Kobe at the end, and said the greatest Los Angeles Laker had ever put on a uniform? Do you agree with him?
You know, that's a good question, and I'm not a big fan of comparing eras. You know, I wasn't alive when Magic Johnson played. I'm only 26 years old, so it's tough to say. You know, I will say this: Kobe's probably one of the best players I've ever seen live or during my lifetime. So, I mean, putting those two up, I mean, it's difficult for me to judge. I mean, they both did well, you know, obviously with their numbers and their careers and everything else. It's tough for me. It's hard to say.
Yeah, to me, it's not that tough. And as great as Kobe is, and he and Magic both have 5 championships, Magic right. was a different cat. He was just a different type of player. And he was the type of player that I think everybody would choose first, because he could do anything. And all we have to do is go back to his rookie year, Game 6, NBA Finals. Kareem is out, and he has to play center. The 6'9 point guard rookie out of Michigan State has to play center and puts in 42 points, grabs 15 rebounds, all in the paint. That's special that you just don't get from anybody else. And I understand some of you younger guys, you too, Kush, might not – have a full appreciation of Magic in his prime. But Magic, to me, is the greatest all-time Laker, as nice and as humble and as generous and as honoring as he was trying to be of Kobe Bryant last night. To me, it's the Magic, and then their second place, which is probably Kobe and Kareem tied or something. So Aaron McMahon joining us. He is MLive.com, covers the Detroit Pistons. We're talking a lot of NBA stuff. Let's go to the...
go ahead. Before we go to the Pistons, there's a question I want to ask you guys.
Sure.
And this is something I've debated on, Golden State thing. Should Golden State now win the NBA title? Do you think that the 73 wins kind of loses its luster? Because this is a topic I've had, you know, debate with other people too before. I mean, should they, you know, they get to the NBA finals or even the Western Conference finals and lose? The 73 wins kind of lose its luster?
I think it does a little bit. I mean, because first of all, then I would be lining up the two 70-win teams. One has a championship and one doesn't.
Right.
So right there, to me, that puts that Bulls in that situation, Aaron. That would put the Bulls team back as greatest team because they finished it out.
Two things. I think no matter what happens, the Bulls are the better team. I'm not going to go Scottie Pippen and say they'd have swept them, but I think the Bulls would have beaten them, and it would have been in five or six at the very most. Just completely different teams. Second of all, yeah, you're right, Aaron. I think it does take a lot away from it. In fact, I bet if you were to ask them in their heart of hearts, if you don't finish this thing out and win the ring, if you don't win the chip here, what did this 73 mean to you? And they're going to say nothing. They're going to say nothing. I mean, because this is what it's all about. Setting the record to become the best team ever, you know, or even to be in that conversation, you have to set that record and finish it. You set that record and then losing the playoffs, it just completely tarnishes the entire thing. And I bet they would tell you that, too. You maybe not on the mic, maybe not for television purposes, but they would feel that way. All right. So we'll move on. That's just our opinion, of course. And did you answer it, Aaron? What was your own question?
Yeah, no, I would agree. You know, I think, you know, they put all this energy and everything else into it. And a lot of teams now, especially in their position, are resting their players on the stretch. Mm-hmm. You know, we saw last night in Cleveland where the Cavs and the Pistons both rested all their starters, because they didn't know, there was no meaning to the game. And granted, this, you know, game obviously had some meaning to it, but at the same time, for playoff purposes, it had none at all. So yeah, you know, I would say I would agree with that 100%.
Yeah, I really do, and I think they would probably tell you the same thing. All right, let's talk about this series now. First-round matchup, it's a 1-8. Excuse me. It probably shouldn't be in doubt. The Cavaliers are the best team in the East. They're supposed to be a contender for the NBA championship, not just to come out of the East, but to be able to possibly beat the Warriors or Spurs. I'm not ready to go there, but I am ready to say that they ought to be able to handle the Detroit Pistons. And I don't know if I want to call it evidence of that or not, but just as a, you know, an aside here, I thought what Stan Van Gundy said yesterday was pretty good. When asked how to defend LeBron James, he said that if there was a book on those guys, then they wouldn't be who they are, which is very, very true. He said, if you're Miguel Cabrera and you don't have a hole, good luck. Pitch him the best you can. He's still going to hit the snot out of you. So in other words, Stan Van is saying, I don't have anything to tell you about how to defend LeBron James. There's no book on how to do that. Otherwise, people would do it. But it's like trying to pitch to Miggy. It's just pretty much you have to kind of get lucky, I think, from time to time.
No, you're absolutely right. And we were talking to some players the other day after the Pistons clinched, and you know, we were asking about the Cavs and everything else. And Marcus Morris, obviously, was going to get the primary assignment on LeBron. You know, he said he's already started looking at tape. He's already started watching video on LeBron. And obviously, this isn't the first time he's going to obviously try and defend him and stop him. But, you know, Pistons have been obviously eyeing that assignment here for about a week now.
Yeah, and, you know, LeBron James is a different guy depending on what game tape he's watching. Because he had a first, we talked about this yesterday, Jim, like 4.5 months of the season where he was just an awful outside shooter from the perimeter, or really from anywhere outside the lane, not even talking three, but just, you know, from perimeter shots, 15, 18 feet. He was having a terrible season shooting the basketball. But in his last 10 games to end this season that he played and going into these playoffs, he is averaging 28.4 points, 8 rebounds, 8.5 assists, and get this, he has shot 63% from the field in those 10 games, 52% from three. So he's adding the outside game, which he was lacking all year long, to the already almost unstoppable freight train locomotive inside type play that he can play. And I don't envy Moore or anybody else who ends up matched up with LeBron in this series.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think it's going to change some things schematically with the Pistons. You know, they're going to have to, you know, that'll bring Marcus Morris and Tobias Harris and the like out. and that's going to put more pressure on Andre Drummond down low. He's already in the hands full, you know, with Tristan Thompson and Miles Goff and everybody else down there. So it's going to be interesting to watch, and I think he's going to be a key to the Pistons' success. You know, if they can stop him or at least limit him, keep him, around 20 points a game, I think the Pistons have a shot. But if he goes off for 30 like he did earlier this season against the Pistons, and he's able to get his get 9 points, 9 assists, whatever he had that game, it's going to spell trouble for Detroit. Absolutely.
See, if Marcus Morris has a help, let me rephrase. Last year, when obviously the Cavs were without Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving in the finals, it's a different story. You can bring somebody over and double LeBron and take your chances with JR that he's going to be on a cold snap instead of one of his ridiculous hot streaks, or anybody else for that matter, or Thompson or Mazzara. But if they're all healthy, which they are now, apparently, and talking about Kyrie, you can't afford to give Morris any help. You can't afford to come over and double on LeBron, because you got guys who are just tremendous offensive talents, all-star offensive talents, which is obviously what they're going to need, when they get to the real heavy hitters like the Warriors, if they do. But that's a tough thing for Stan Van Gundy to decide. Do I want to take my chances with those guys, great as they are, by doubling on LeBron and giving Morris help, or just say, hey, sorry, kid, I'm going to leave you out there on this island. You know, it's like trying to guard, Antonio Brown or somebody right now. I'm going to leave you on this island and wish you the best of luck because I can't give you any help.
Yeah, and one thing about the Pistons, too, is, since they traded for Tobias Harris, they haven't really improved defensively. You know, that's something that Stan was hoping would occur this season. I mean, they started off strong. They've had a couple lapses, but overall they haven't been real, especially their starting five, hasn't been real strong defensively, and Tobias Harris still has some work to do, and that's something Van Gundy has kind of brought up here. But yeah, you're absolutely right. If they have to double on a Kyrie or a LeBron, I mean, it's going to leave somebody else, open, and it's gonna be tough. I mean, it's gonna be tough for the Pistons to keep up with them. I mean, Van Gundy likes to joke that he wishes he had five Kentavious Caldwell Pope's, because Pope's obviously their best defender, and that's someone they kind of put on their opponent's best player. Obviously, he'll probably spend most of his time on Kyrie. But it's gonna be a rough go for the Pistons if they can't stop Kyrie and LeBron.
Aaron McMahon covers the Pistons for MLive.com. Jim Kushlin is here as well as we preview this first-round playoff series in the Eastern Conference. Jim, you got one, bud? Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'm looking at this and thinking about the meaninglessness of yesterday's game, but there is one thing that jumped out at me, and it could be an interesting thing for the Pistons. I couldn't help but notice that Jody Meeks has finally returned to at least basketball playing shape. He was in that game yesterday, and I think that's only, his third or fourth game of the whole season due to the injuries that have cost him the whole year. He was a guy that they brought in to maybe be an offensive punch off the bench. If there's any one player from either side, and I'm counting Jordan McRae, who had like 28 or 30 or whatever the heck he did, if there's one player from either side that actually did play yesterday that could have an impact, I would think it's a guy like Jody Meeks, because, again, his purpose was to be offense off the bench. And if there's one thing, especially in bench situations, that the Pistons are going to need in this series to be competitive, it's some extra scoring, especially if it's off the bench. Can Jody Meeks actually be able to provide that for Detroit? Because I think that might be something that really might help the Pistons, especially in bench play.
No, you're absolutely right, Jim. And I'm curious to see what happened there, too, because, gosh, it was about a month ago now. I remember asking Stan about Jody, and he basically said that the plan was to shut him down for the rest of the season. He broke his foot, I think it was second game of the season. He'd been out ever since. He was due back in the beginning of March. He had a setback. He never was able to come back healthy. He got injured in practice a few weeks later. They never played him. And I guess last night was a good opportunity to get him in there to see what he could do. And I think he surprised some people. You know, he had team high 20 points for the Pistons. He looked good shooting the ball. He looked in rhythm there, which is kind of surprising. So, and Van Gundy was asked afterwards if maybe he'll consider putting him in rotation in the playoffs. He didn't rule it out. I'd be surprised at this point, at least early on, to see Jody play any consistent minutes. But if they need some scoring off the bench, like you said, I mean, be a good option, especially with Stanley Johnson, who's really struggled the last few weeks after injuring his shoulder. He hasn't played regular minutes. He's been out of the rotation for about a week now. So maybe Jody slides in there and gets more minutes, and who knows? But he absolutely could be an interesting person to watch as the series goes on.
Aaron, best case scenario for the Pistons in this series. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to pick them, and if I'm wrong, tell me if you're picking them, but I don't think anybody's going to pick them to beat the Cavaliers here. What's best case? Can they win a game? Can they win two, do you think? Or is avoiding a sweep an accomplishment here for being in the playoffs for the first time in 9 years?
I will say this. Brandon Jennings tweeted earlier this morning that he's picking the Pistons, but he's probably the only one. No, I would say best case scenario would be two wins for the Pistons. You know, realistically, I'm thinking 4-1. They get a win probably in Detroit, either, you know, game three or game four. But no, this is just getting here, I think, is an accomplishment. You know, this was the goal that the Pistons set forth for this season. They didn't talk about it a whole lot, but talking briefly with Van Gundy and over Tom Gores. You know, this is the next step. They want to get to the playoffs. They've been here since 2009. They improved last season under Van Gundy just a touch. So you knew they wanted to get here. They didn't say it a whole lot, but now they're here. I think that they're happy with it, but at the same time, you know, they're not settling either. If you talk to the players, they all say, oh, they're out to win the series, and of course they're going to say that. But as a franchise, this was the next step. They've gotten here, and this is what they want. This is what they want to do.
Aaron McMahon joining us from MLive.com. Aaron, real quick, Jim and I both grew up as fans of the Cavaliers, so it might sound biased, but I'm not. And the reason I say that is I'm not impressed. I don't feel great going into this playoff. They'll beat the Pistons. I agree with you. It'll probably be 4-1. I give the Pistons a game at home. I'm not in love with that team and the way they're playing right now and the way they're being coached by Tyronn Lue. I'm not just going to sit here and homer my way and say, hey, that's my team. We're going to win, blah, blah, blah. You're not a fan, and so you can look at this completely objectively. Is there a threat in the Eastern Conference to stop the Cavaliers from getting back to a potential rematch with the Warriors? Is there anybody who do you think can keep them out of the finals?
You know, that's a good question. I was looking at the field earlier. You know, the obvious answer would be Toronto. I think that would probably be a Toronto-Cleveland Eastern Conference final. Toronto's been, I guess, I don't say sneakily good, but they've impressed me in the games they played Detroit this season. Their backcourt is really strong. I would say it's probably the best backcourt in the Eastern Conference. You know, it's a good question. I think the Cavs just get there by happen. They get to the Eastern Conference Finals by happenstance, just on talent and talent alone. I don't know. That's a good question. I think if they can gel, I would say this: if they're able to sweep the Pistons and do it, strong and without, you know, any question, I would say, you know, they would obviously be the home run shot to an Eastern Conference. I'm curious to see how they play the Pistons these games coming up. You know, if they're able to look impressive, I would say no. But if the Pistons, you know, if they stumble, the Pistons give them, you know, a game or two. I don't know. I would be concerned if I was a Cavs fan.
You know, the other way I'll spin this real quick, Bob, is because I think if you're from the Cavs perspective, last night's results in the rest of the Eastern Conference couldn't have broken better for the Cavs. If they're to beat the Pistons, which I think we all assume they would, they get the Atlanta-Boston winner in the 4-5, and the Cavs match up very, very well with both of them, and they would only now see one between Toronto or even Miami, who still gives them fits down in Miami.
Yeah, that's my answer to my own question, Jim, is I worry about the Heat, I think, more than I do. I don't know why, but LeBron does not seem to take down his best buddy, Dwayne, Dwayne, and they are driven to take him apart.
And that's why I think last night, from the Cavs' perspective, it broke as well as it could have been. I guess you're replacing Atlanta or Boston with a Charlotte, but it's pretty insignificant because the Cavs match up with all three of them very well. So much so that I dare say that if the Pistons bring their A game more often than not in this series, I dare say that this Pistons matchup will actually be tougher than their semifinal matchup.
Yeah, and that's the thing we've kind of talked about as media members. You know, I would say nobody wanted to play the Pistons right now. You know, they're kind of a mystery, so to speak. You know, they've gone in spurts this season. You don't know what you get from them night in and night out. I mean, this is a team that's beaten Golden State. I mean, they obviously beaten Cleveland twice. So they've proven they can play with the big boys. Maybe not consistently or every night, but, you know, the Pistons can scare some teams. And if they get a little roll here and win, you know, a game or two, you never know. You know, with the NBA playoffs, it's interesting. So, no, I mean, the Pistons, I think, are an interesting matchup. I think they'll give them a series. They'll make it at least be competitive in most of the games. Whether or not they're able to get the win is a different story.
Aaron, last thing out west. Any possible way that Team 73 isn't back in the finals? Do you think the Spurs have a shot to stop him in a series? Or a team that's got a ton of talent that has run with them pretty well in the past? Talking about the Thunder, can anybody stop Team 73?
I don't think so. If they get to the finals, no. I mean, San Antonio might give them a series. I can see that maybe going six, maybe seven, just because of the way San Antonio plays at home. I mean, it's tough to beat them at home, and they play well there. No, I think Golden State gets to the finals, and if I had to put money down right now, I would say Golden State wins another NBA title.
All right. I think it's probably good or bad. I've been saying that I think the Spurs would beat them. But the last two times they played the last four games of the season, one at each place, Golden State was the better team. They played better. They played stronger. They played hungrier. And it wasn't like Pop was sitting everybody. He didn't play Diaw in one of them, so that has an impact. But still, as much as I kind of want to see San Antonio do it, I think I'm coming around to what you just said, and a Golden State repeat is probably inevitable here. Good stuff. Aaron McMahon is MLive.com, Detroit Pistons beat writer. Really good analysis of the NBA. Thanks for the time. Even though you don't remember Magic too much there, trust me when I tell you, he's number one and Kobe is number two in that all-time Laker thing. You're just going to have to take my word for that one.
I'll go find some YouTube clips, definitely.
There you go. That's a good thing to do. You'll enjoy the heck out of it, my friend. Trust me on that one. Aaron, thanks much.
Yep, thanks, Bob.
There you go. Aaron McMahon from MLive.com. Hey, Kush, real quick before we go to the Sports Center, two baseball finals this afternoon.
Yes.
I know you already reported the Tigers beat the Pirates 7-4. I just happened, because it came across my screen as we were talking, the Indians beat Tampa Bay 6-0. And Danny Salazar, wow, nice start. Six innings, three hits, no runs, nine strikeouts, three walks. His ERA through his two starts, 0.79 is a pretty good start. But that's not what jumped out at me as I just clicked on the box score when the final came across.
Okay.
You want to hear what the Indians lineup today they're doing right now?
Lay it on me.
I mean, they're getting production from guys I'm sure they didn't expect this kind of production from. You know, Rajah Davis 3-for-5 today. He had a run and a run scored and a run driven in. Francisco Lindor they do expect great things from, but he was 2-for-5 with the first run driven in of the game. He's hitting .321. Tyler Naquin, who, you know, wasn't supposed to make this team, absolutely made it impossible for him to not make this team in spring because he just hit the crap out of the ball. Tyler was 3-for-5 with a run driven in. He's hitting .444 on the young season thus far. And Bird was 2-for-3 today. He drove in a couple of runs as well. So the reason I bring that up is, Napoli is a masher. He's got some bombs. Santana's supposed to be. He was 0-for-5. Jason Kipnis was 0-for-2. They got a bunch of run production, 13 knocks, six runs, without most of their core guys doing any core things. They're getting great, great production here in the early going from some guys. And we haven't talked a lot of Indians baseball in the first couple of weeks of the season. We've done a ton of Tigers. But I just wanted to shine a spotlight on some of those young kids, and some of them aren't young kids like Davis and Knapp and Bird, but newbies to this team that they really weren't expecting a ton of production from that they're getting.
And it doesn't matter from my perspective, Bob, and when you're talking about the Indians in 2016, I don't care if they're one of the young guys like Lindor or Naquin or even Jose Ramirez to a degree, or if they're some of the more veteran guys like a Marlon Byrd or Rajay
Davis.
Jose
was 2-for-5 today. I'm sorry, I skipped him. Jose Ramirez was 2-for-5 with an RBI.
I just listed everybody who had an RBI and or home run for the Indians today. Doesn't matter if they're veterans or young guys. The Indians will win or lose depending on how well they hit the ball. Pure and simple, because you're going to get Salazar outings more often than not.
And
with
yesterday's
this
Carrasco,
staff.
Yesterday's
exactly.
Carrasco, 8 innings, 9 strikeouts while pitching with some sort of intestinal flu or something.
And what
like
happened?
That.
But what happened 2 days ago? Corey Kluber went to the 8th inning. He lost it, but the Indians only gave him one run.
They
it's
never give
simple
him
as the, yeah, they never do. It seems that way. That's why I had so many losses last year. But that's why it comes back to me. And I saw it the last this whole three game series in Tampa is evidence of what the Indians will make or break. If they can hit the ball, they're going to win more often than not. It's really going to be as simple as that.
So the Indians are 4-3 now on the young season after having a bunch of rainouts. Obviously, they've been postponed 3 times in the first week of the season. So they're 4-3 now, 3-2 away from Progressive Field. The Tigers, a robust 6-2, 4-0 away from Detroit. They beat the Pirates today 7-4.
And that was 6 shutout innings from Jordan Zimmermann. Both Indians and Tigers starters going 6 shutout today.
Paying dividends. The big money free agent acquisition is now 2-0, and he hasn't given up an earned run yet. Talking about
nice.
I'm bragging about Salazar 0.79. Zimmerman's over there going, hey, you know what? Screw you. 0.00. So there you have it. A little baseball update for you. Just wanted to throw it in there. On the other side of the sports center, bottom of the sports center, I want to get back to the NBA. I want to talk more about last night. I'm sorry? Oh, we can do that too. Jim Cushion reminded me very kindly that we have two more chances for you to qualify for the Orlando Flyaway prize package. Today and tomorrow, your last chances, because on Monday, right here on the ticket, we will announce the winner of the Orlando Flyaway. So this is your last chance to be the 10th, or I'm sorry, second to last chance to be the 10th caller to 866-240-1065. You could land in Orlando, Florida for 4 days and three nights at the beautiful Orlando World Center Marriott, offering experiences that are a world beyond compare. Brought to you locally by our friends at Allegiant Air, Toledo Express Airport, Cartwright of Monroe, Shea's Carpet, Generators Plus, and, of course, ESPN 106.5, the ticket. So call it 10 right now, 866-240-1065. You will be one of our last two qualifiers today and tomorrow for the Orlando Flyaway. Good luck.
By calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 106.5, the ticket.
It is indeed the extravaganza rolling on ESPN 106.5. The ticket, take it till 5 o'clock drive time, coming your way with Mike Miller. And Jim Cushing, there's a lot I want to do in this last segment. I don't know how much we're going to be able to get done, because I wanted to follow up on your question from the first half hour when we had our tech problems about the greatest farewell performances in sports history. And you talk about the MVP of the Super Bowl, John Elway,
right,
going out with a championship.
And a great numbers. Game. Yeah, the Super Bowl MVP that game, too.
Yeah, he was. He was Super Bowl MVP, and he threw for 300 and some odd yards.
18-29. I have all the numbers already. 18-29, 336, touchdown pick, and he rushed for a touchdown that game. That was the Falcons one. To be confused with the one where he helicoptered. That was the one before against Green Bay.
And he went out with a championship.
Yep.
Which is, of course, much, much better than Kobe ending a, 16 or 17 win season, with his end yesterday. I mean,
that's why Elway's is one over. That's why Elway is one on my list over what we saw last night in Kobe, just because of the championship part.
What else in your little research escapades that you did today did you come up with as possibles?
Not very many. That's actually the funny part. I went into this thinking I was going to find a lot, thinking of some old stories.
Jim, I thought about it before you brought it up. Mm-hmm. And I mean, just off the top of your head, how many guys, usually guys who are legends, leave at the end because they just have nothing left?
Exactly. Good point. But I knew there
you
was...
You mentioned Gretzky.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's one. There's a couple out there that did have some pretty decent games or performances of what turned out to be their last time.
Lay them on me.
One of them that I remember is from my baseball series thing, Ted Williams, back in 1960. His last at-bat was a home run in Fenway.
Did he hit three home runs in that game?
No.
Then it's not 60.
Right.
You know what I mean? The 60 points of Kobe last.
Here's possibly one, and somebody, because somebody was trying to put their own list together, and somebody else threw this out, and I double-checked, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's true. 1992, Pete Sampras, in his final time ever on a tennis court, beat Andre Agassi for the 1992 U.S. Open final.
That's pretty large.
So that's one that would be up there. Sorry, Bob.
And in fact, it might pass Kobe, because, again, it was for a championship.
Right. But these are the definite minorities. The majority you see are things like Dan Marino's final game, 11-25, 95 yards, touchdown, two picks. That was a divisional playoff game, but that was the one that Jacksonville beat Miami 62-7.
Exactly.
You see games most like that. You don't see a lot of the other ones. One other decent one though,
even Peyton winning the Super Bowl in February.
That's on my list just because he won a Super Bowl. But of course,
his own personal accomplishments there were next to nothing.
Exactly. So. One that does have the numbers and winning a championship, it's from a long time ago, and sorry, folks, my Browns bias got into me. Otto Graham's last game, the 1955 NFL title game, back in the pre-Super Bowl days, 14-25, 209, two touchdowns, did have three picks, but also rushed for two touchdowns. And I do remember hearing that the L.A. Coliseum crowd actually cheered when he went off the field for the last time in that game.
Okay. Those are some interesting ones.
But those are the rarity ones.
Let me speak a little bit more on the Kobe one, because I didn't get a chance to do that, obviously, before. Two things I would say about this. When I tweeted before the show, before we had our tech problems, I tweeted this from, and by the way, follow us on Twitter. We are really expanding our online presence. We're really expanding our digital association with our on-air products. So follow us on Twitter at Sports Radio 106.5. I will not tweet sports from my personal Twitter feed. I do only politics there, and it usually drives sports fans nuts. I don't like to mix sports and politics. So I tweet sports, signed with a BF, on Sports Radio 106.5, and I tweet politics from my other one. So anyway, before the show today, I tweeted about the question that I asked, and that was, do you think, or which would you rather have been in yesterday? Oracle, as the Warriors won their 73, now that you know both games are over and you know that Kobe put up 60, or would you have rather have been in Staples last night to see the 60? And the first guy to respond was somebody named Kevin, who tweeted, hashtag 50 shots. And my response to that was, I know that that's going to be a criticism, or the criticism, from a lot of people saying, yeah, well, you know, a lot of guys could get 60 points on 50 shots. Do not fall into that trap, because A, this was not a Lakers team that had a whole heck of a lot of other options. Would you have rather seen D'Angelo Russell take 10 more and Kobe 10 less? Would that have made you feel better?
I know, right?
Think about that.
It's not just that, too. It's that, plus the fact we've all known for how long this is going to be his last game. I'm almost willing to bet, they'll never say this on the record, I'm almost willing to bet a few of those younger Lakers were almost scared to shoot the ball, thinking, am I even supposed allowed to do this tonight?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and Kobe even teased about it after the game. He said, you know, my entire career, people have been yelling at me, pass the ball, Kobe, and today they were saying, shoot the ball, Kobe. So this is something that, A, they wanted him to do, B, he should have done, because, again, it's not like there's a lot of guys to share the ball with there in the context of a game. Now, this is the other part of it for me that really makes, you know, where I'm so impressed by this. This wasn't a career-ending game in which they were getting blown out by the Jazz, and they were down by 20, so the Lakers just said, ah, screw it, let Kobe go get his. This was a competitive game. They were within 8 to 10.
Yeah.
You know, 8 to 10, 12 points for pretty much the entire second half. Every possession mattered. And at the end of it all, they came back from down 12. It might have been even 15 at one point. They came back from down 15 behind Kobe, who, yes, it took him 50 shots to get 60 points, but it didn't take him that many shots to get 23 in the fourth quarter when he was straight up killing.
And he was the only one shooting. It small degree, it reminded me of the LeBron Game 5 at the Palace from those years ago.
Yeah, a little bit. From 2004, 5, 6?
7.
7. 7. The 2006 regular season. 6-7 regular season. There you go. So the playoffs after that. Anyway, but he was killing it. He made his last 5 shots. It wasn't like he was forcing them from half court trying to be Steph. And it wasn't like, you know, it was just, I mean, he was getting to the rim and scoring. He was penetrating and pulling up for 8 to 10 footers and scoring. He was hitting threes and scoring. So it was in the context of a game, and it worked. They won. Now, it doesn't mean anything because it was the end of a season for a dismal team. But again, he closed out his career with 60 points in a victory,
yep,
a comeback victory that he was almost single-handedly responsible for, rather than in a game that was decided a quarter and a half ago, and it's just, hey, let's jack it up and turn it into an NBA All-Star game where nobody plays defense, and you know, he can just go ahead and pad stats.
Yep.
He did it while being defended. He did it with double teams. He did it with guys in his face. He did it when he beat his guy off the dribble, and he had to get around to help defender who came over to stop him in the paint, and he weaved and Mamba slithered around him for reverse layups. I mean, they didn't give him 60 points. He took 60 points. And that, to me, Jim, is something, you know, and I'm not the hugest Kobe fan. We talked about this yesterday.
Right.
But I am in awe of the way he went out yesterday. It was spectacular. It was great theater. It was great sportsmanship. It was great competitive basketball. It wasn't show, you know, Harlem Globetrotters basketball with the Jazz playing Washington Generals type defense against him and saying, let him go, let him have his career game, his final game. They
I will admit the Jazz may have been a little less enthused than we would have originally thought because the way the time structures of yesterday happened, mm-hmm, Houston had already won, thus eliminating Utah by the time that tip-off happened. But I didn't really notice that out of the Jazz. I didn't see the, no, oh, let's just let him do his thing. They may not have been playing you know, as their top-notch competitive, had they, that game still meant something to them, which it didn't by tip-off time. But I didn't see a team that, like, say, you know, I just mentioned Houston, like Sacramento, their opponent, who just laid down and didn't play everybody. It wasn't that case.
Right. Absolutely not. It really was not. And that's important to note. Jim, I know we got drive time coming up here. I don't know what our clock looks like. Do we have time to take Pat and Perrysburg? Yes or no?
Yeah, we can do that.
Pat and Perrysburg. Let's do that. Pat, go ahead. We're going to get you up and on the air, but I only have a minute for you, Pat. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I just think it's overblown, the 60, just because of how many shots he took. And, I mean, he was 22 of 50, less than 50%. And who else was going to shoot the ball? Everybody knew, like you guys said, coming in, he's going to shoot the ball. Just think if he didn't make the 22 shots, how bad that game would have turned out.
Well, that's kind of the point. If he doesn't make the 22 shots, and especially the 10 or whatever it was in the fourth quarter that he made, they lose the game probably by a big margin. And, of course, if he's not hitting, and he scored in spurts. He had cold spells and an incredible hot streaks. If he's not hitting and having those hot streaks, he's not going to keep shooting. He's not going to take 50 shots. He took 50 shots because as he kept going, especially in the second half when he was red hot, I'd like to see what his shooting percentage was in the second half, but I guarantee you it was over 50% in the second half when the game was on the line.
Yeah, but he started out 0 for 5. He still would have taken the 50 shots regardless if he hit 10 of them.
I don't think so. He wouldn't have wanted to go out like that, and I don't think Byron Scott would have let him go out like that.
Yeah, I just think it's overblown, and I would have definitely been wanted to have been at the Warriors game over that.
Okay. Well, and that's what we were asking, my friend. Pat, thanks for the call. I appreciate you squeezing that in before the top of the hour here. Thanks for the thoughts. I would like to have seen the Warriors game, too, but there's no doubt in my mind, especially in hindsight, although I feel good about saying that I called this beforehand, I'd like to have gone to Kobe's last game. I would have seen that magic 50-60-point performance, and I got to tell you, I don't think it was overblown at all. The 50 shots doesn't bother me. Again, who was going to shoot? Who made it better? What would have made it better?
Hey,
giving 10 more shots to somebody else and 10 less to Kobe.
Yeah.
When this is a team that has been awful all year long and they just don't have anybody else who can.
I totally don't mind the number of shots because we knew it was coming. Flip side, Michael Jordan's actual last game with the Wizards 2003, he was 6 of 15 from the field, 28 minutes, 15 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. Would you rather have seen that from Kobe last night? I think not.
Nope, absolutely not. I would rather have seen what we got from him. Good stuff. All right. Hey, want to do something nice for you on the way out. As we do on Thursdays, our sweet deal of the week. 106.5 The Ticket's got this great opportunity for you. First of all, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. at 1065theticket.com, you can get a $150 VIP pass for just $75 to Ohio Bike Week to get you to see all the great major events and concerts, including Sebastian Bach, Eddie Money, Buck Cherry, Blackstone Cherry, Jackal, Pop Evil, the Kiss Tribute Band, Mr. Speed. It's all tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. while supplies last. $150 VIP passes go on sale for just $75. Or how about this? I will give you a four-pack of passes to Bike Week right now. If you're the 10th caller at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, four-pack of tickets to go and see Eddie Money at Ohio Bike Week and Bike Week at Mad River Harley in Sandusky. It's May 28th. Just log on to 1065theticket.com for your tickets tomorrow. Win the freebies to see Eddie Money right now as the 10th caller. All right, that's it. Drive Time is coming up next with Miller. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.